It's Ask the Governor, in depth with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
A very pleasant good Wednesday morning. It is nice to have you with us for another edition of Ask the Governor. Governor Ralph Northam from Virginia is in the studio with us, along with NBC4's Julie Carey, and we'll be having a conversation for the next hour, and we hope you will participate. Here's how you can call in with a question for the governor, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Please be patient. We will try to get to as many calls as we can, but there may be a little bit of a wait before we get to you, but we will do our best. 877-336-1035. You can also tweet your question using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question on our Facebook Live page. If you like us on Facebook, you can watch the show on Facebook Live as well. Governor, good morning.
Good
nice
morning,
to see you again.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Mark and Debbie and Julie. It's good to be back in the Nerve Center. So thanks for having me, and I hope your listeners are doing well.
All right. Well, we'll jump right in with we have quite a bit to talk to you about this morning, and we're going to start with one of the topics that's been in the news for the last couple of weeks. As you know, from overnight, a California judge has ordered U.S. border authorities to reunite separated children with their parents, migrant children who have illegally entered the country. He wants that done with the judge has ordered that within 30 days. The same judge also issuing a nationwide injunction on future family separations. 17 states, Governor, as you know, including Virginia and Maryland, and the district suing the Trump administration also to force the reunification of migrant families. The president has issued an executive order to end the practice, but that lawsuit states that the president's order is riddled with caveats. You have directly responded to the administration's zero-tolerance policy. You recalled Virginia National Guard troops from the border as well as a helicopter. Tell us about that decision and whether you think the whether it was something that actually makes a significant difference, and whether the president's executive order satisfies your concerns.
Well, Mark, I understand that Virginia has supported the mission to protect our borders, but the policies that are coming out of Washington right now and the recent policy of separating children from their families, just as a father, as a pediatrician, as an American, I couldn't accept that. I can't condone that. And so, to your point, I did bring back our unit. We had a helicopter and four service members down there. And I think that the answer to your question, does that make an impact? I think it does make an impact because Americans are tired of some of the policies that we're seeing, and Americans are standing up and saying, you know, this is not what this country is about, and it's certainly not what Virginia is about. And so the executive order that our president signed, I have looked at that. It's very vague. There's still a number of children that are continue to be separated from their families, and that's just not something I can condone. So that, you know, a lot of people say, thank you for doing that, Governor Northam. It was an easy decision. It was the right thing to do. And until the policies are changed, we won't support that mission.
So at what point will you be comfortable in restoring National Guard personnel once all the reunifications have happened, or are you asking for more than that?
Well, I'm asking that these children be reunited with their families and that this policy stop. And when we see that happening, then we'll be at the table, and again, we'll make a decision on whether we will continue to support the mission down there.
When we come back from traffic and weather, we know that there are some children being housed at facilities in Virginia. We want to ask you a little bit about those shelters.
Absolutely.
And what's happening there right after traffic and weather. Back with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. It's Ask the Governor until 11 o'clock this morning. Join the conversation at 877-336-1035. Again, 877-336-1035. Governor, we learned that some of the recently separated children at the border are being housed at a facility in Virginia in Bristow. Mm-hmm. But the Washington Post says there are as many as four shelters in Virginia and two in Maryland designed to receive unaccompanied migrant children. Others are housed in foster homes. But the Post wasn't able to learn from federal authorities just how many kids are being housed in either state. Do you know how many children are coming here, coming to Virginia, and how many have been here for some time?
You know, Debbie, I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but, you know, I became very concerned. It's been a couple weeks now when I heard that there were individuals that were at the Shenandoah facility, and that there were some accusations that these children were not being treated fairly and humanely, and I immediately called for an investigation. Our Secretary of Public Safety, Brian Moran, went that night with an individual from Department of Juvenile Justice. And I will say that the three individuals that had filed those complaints are no longer at that facility. But this is a facility that is in Virginia. We have oversight of these facilities. The children that are there are there at the direction of the federal government, but we certainly are concerned and want to make sure that they're treated humanely. And so it's something we've been paying a lot of attention to.
Now, Governor, we have read some reports that other state officials, a House delegate, had tried to see the operations of that facility in Stanton, and the delegate was denied entry. Are state officials, you mentioned one, but are state officials allowed in, and are there regular inspections there? What is the process?
Well, absolutely. And you know, like I said, our Secretary of Public Safety, Brian Moran, has been there, our Department of Juvenile Justice. I was not aware of the delegate that was not allowed to be, but I would be glad to, if they want to get in there and tour the facility, see what's going on with these children, I'll be glad to help facilitate that.
Any responses from federal authorities? I know that the Senators Warner and Kane have been asking for answers. What, if anything, have you heard from the federal government on this?
Well, no, I have. You know, I'm in contact with both Senator Kane and Warner, and they have been very concerned about it. But, you know, I have tried to keep my investigation, what we're doing at the state level, so I haven't had a whole lot of interaction with the federal folks.
We should say that the center has publicly denied the allegations that were made by the juveniles there, and your investigation, at what point will you expect to have an outcome?
Yes, well, we have interviewed the children specifically at Shenandoah, and that investigation is ongoing, but we haven't seen any evidence thus far. Like I said, the three that made those accusations are no longer there, and so I think the fact that we are looking into it, I hope that we won't hear any more of those reports.
Governor, another center that has been under scrutiny is the Youth for Tomorrow facility out in the Bristow area in Prince William County. As we speak, Senator Warner is touring that facility. Mm-hmm. It has long had a contract to provide shelter and education for unaccompanied minors, but we're hearing now that there may also be tender-age children out there. What is your understanding about that facility and the role it's playing with children separated from their parents at the border?
Well, Julie, just as you said, the individuals that have been at these facilities historically have been unaccompanied. If there are small children, infants, that type of thing, that's just something, again, that we can't condone. And I will be in touch with Senator Warner and hear of his observations there. But again, you know, we'll work together to make sure that, number one, that we are taking care of these children adequately, and number two, that children that have been separated from their families, especially over the past few weeks with these policies coming out of Washington, that they're reunited with their families. So that's what our focus is on. And as I said earlier, Julie, it is so un-American, and as a father, we cannot condone, as a society, as a country, separating children from their parents. It's just inexcusable, and I will do everything and work at the state level, and we'll work with Senators Warner and Kane and anybody else at the federal level to make sure that this doesn't continue.
Governor, the immigration issue is likely to still be simmering by Election Day in November. Immigration reform is certainly one of the issues that Republican Corey Stewart has made a cornerstone of his campaign in challenging Senator Tim Kaine. President Trump's base and others support the notion of strong immigration enforcement and border security, and the president has been casting Democrats as weak on these issues. Do Democrats have a strong message on this issue, and do you think it is a winning one in Virginia?
Well, I think we do have a strong message, Mark. And, you know, when the president issued his travel ban, I felt that was un-American. As you know, I served in the United States Army. We had individuals from Iraq and Iran that were helping with intelligence, helping with interpretations. And for this country to turn our backs on the very people that have helped us is just unacceptable. And so I was proud to be at Dulles when all that happened with Governor Terry McAuliffe, our Attorney General. Justin Fairfax was there, Tom Perriello. A lot of us were there to say that this is not what we believe in as Americans. We obviously want to keep our border safe, Mark, but we also want to be welcoming in Virginia. And things like the travel ban do nothing more than promote fear-mongering. It makes individuals scared that are already here. We've had those discussions before. And again, I would just hope that the policies change. And to your point, the Democrats do have a solid message. We believe in comprehensive immigration reform. I have asked all along that the Congress do their job. You know, there's so much dysfunction right now. Two pieces of legislation that can't even get off the floor. And so people need to put the politics aside if they can. Sit down at the table and come up with a comprehensive plan, and it would address a lot of these very issues, but they can't seem to get that done.
Just want to go back to the Stanton, Virginia facility. Is this facility state licensed?
It is, yes.
It is.
It's managed by the Commonwealth of Virginia.
So, and it's owned and operated by the localities, right, in the region?
Yes, ma'am.
So what role specifically can the state play here in oversight to determine if these allegations are true? And what role can the state play in changing the situation?
It's a great question. I believe it is one of oversight. And so when we go into a facility like Shenandoah with our Secretary of Public Safety or folks from the Department of Juvenile Justice and say, we are very concerned about what we're hearing. Mm-hmm. And just as I said, we interviewed children that were in that facility and we're investigating that. But I think there's nothing better than someone looking over your shoulder and saying, we've heard that there are some problems. We're here to address those. And that's what we'll continue to do.
Does that mean that there could be a point at which that facility would be shut down?
Well, there are a lot of options, but you know, right now we're in the middle of an investigation. We'll do as much fact gathering as we can, and then we'll make a decision how to move forward.
We're going to break here for traffic and weather. When we come back, there is some breaking news out of the U.S. Supreme Court to tell you about. We'll get to that and more. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. We'll be taking your phone calls in just a moment. Stand by if you're on the line holding 877-336-1035. If you have a question for the governor, Governor Ralph Northam in the studio until 11 o'clock, 877-336-1035. Tweet us using the hashtag AskThe. And of course, join us again on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, and you can watch the program on Facebook Live again this morning. Governor, some breaking news this morning coming from the U.S. Supreme Court, where the justices have ruled that government workers cannot be forced to contribute to labor unions that represent them in collective bargaining. That deals a serious financial blow, potentially, to organized labor. The justices scrapping a 41-year-old decision that had allowed states to require that public employees pay some fees to unions that represent them, even if the workers choose not to. It fulfills a longtime wish of conservatives to get rid of the so-called fair share fees that non-members pay to unions in about two dozen states. I want to get your reaction to this. Democrats have long had the support of unions. What's your view on this decision?
Well, obviously, labor serves a very important role in Virginia. The unions are as well, and I've always been supportive of our unions. They play a very important role. They want a level playing field. They want to know that they have good wages and salaries for their workers, that they work in safe communities, that they have good benefits. And so I will reach out and talk to our unions, our labor folks in Virginia, and talk through this Supreme Court decision and see how we move forward from this. As you know, we've had a lot of Supreme Court decisions in the past few days.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one that really does affect Virginia as well as this one, with our redistricting. And so there are 11 districts in Virginia that the Supreme Court said were drawn unfairly, that we're going to go back to the drawing board. And I look at this as a good day for Virginia voters, and something that we've really tried to promote a lot of bipartisanship this year. And I think it's a chance that we can sit down at the table and come up with redistricting that's fair and that allows good representation in Virginia.
Well, since you raised the redistricting court decision, let me ask, where do you see this going? It sounds like House Republicans want to appeal this.
Right.
I believe the court's order was to have new lines drawn by the end of October.
Yes.
Where do you see this moving? The lawmakers are in special session still because I don't think they adjourned. Could they address this right now?
They could. From the report that I just heard, just as you did, that they are going to appeal this. They have 90 days to do that. And then, you know, they will make a decision whether they want to hear that particular case. But we have been ordered to redraw these districts before October. And so depending on how the timeline plays out, we could have 11 new districts before the elections in November of 2019. So, again, I think it's a chance for us to sit down, depending on what the Supreme Court says about this, how the appeal goes, but to do what's in the best interest of Virginia voters.
Is it time for an independent commission to handle the redrawing of districts in Virginia, and would you support that strongly and try to get other lawmakers on board?
Mark, as you know, I served in the Senate for 6 years. I was on privileges and elections, and every year we proposed legislation for nonpartisan redistricting, and it did very well in the Senate, and then it was defeated in the House. But, you know, Virginians have spoken, and I hope they will continue to speak up and say that we need to support nonpartisan redistricting. The gerrymandering across this Commonwealth has to stop, and again, I've been an advocate for that all along, and I will continue to support such a move forward.
Is there not a process to double check these entries? There's no requirement to use mapping software or anything like that to make sure that people who live close to boundaries are in the correct district. Are there specific issues being addressed as far as you know?
Well, as you know, we've had some challenges with that. Our Board of Elections is working through that and trying to make some changes so that doesn't continue to happen. But that is a very reason that we need to address redistricting. As your listeners know, that happens in 2021. And again, I think people throughout the Commonwealth need to speak up and say, you know, this is something that we want. We want nonpartisan redistricting. And the borders of these districts have to be addressed.
Well, one of the issues that links to that is that we're continuing to hear, and we've talked about this in recent Ask the Governor broadcasts with you, we continue to hear more about more Virginia voters who were voting in the wrong district. We're hearing from state officials, well, you know, the local elections folks determine, you know, tell us who's in what district and whatnot. But apparently there are no double checks at the state level to make sure that the positioning is correct, that people are voting in the right district at the time, you know, from whether it's mapping software or what have you. What plans do you have to fix this?
Well, Mark, we are well aware of that. And as I just said, we've had some challenges, but our Board of Elections, we've had some turnover or I've put some new people in charge of that. And we're addressing these challenges. And I think what you'll see is that in the upcoming elections, we have addressed these. And again, back to the original our point of this discussion is that we need to sit down at the table and talk about a comprehensive plan for nonpartisan redistricting, and that's something that we'll lead on as we move forward.
We will go to the phones upon returning from traffic and weather. A number of callers have some questions for you, Governor.
We are back with Ask the Governor, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam in the studio for the next half hour. 877-336-1035. Phone lines are lighting up, and we're going to go right to them and take a call from Dan, who's calling in from Centerville, Virginia. Dan, what's your question for the governor?
Good morning. I'm currently a teacher in Maryland, relocated to Virginia 2 years ago when I got married to my wife. A school in Fairfax County wanted to hire me based on my credentials and effective teaching record at their school. During the process, the principal was informed that they could not hire me. After more research, I discovered that the law prohibiting former incarcerated individuals to be hired in the state. My incarceration was over 20 years ago. I live and pay taxes in the state. I'm a productive citizen, and I've paid my debt to society. What can be done to change this law?
Thank you, Dan. And I don't know if you were following, but we just signed a piece of legislation a few days ago that looks at that very issue, at licensure issues. And in this particular case, looking at individuals that are coming from other states, and if they are properly credentialed and licensed in other states, then they have reciprocity in Virginia. So hopefully we're making some progress in the right direction to address your particular issue. But, you know, we want to make sure that, one, people are treated fairly, and two, that we are able to recruit and retain the most talented teachers in Virginia. So we appreciate all that you do. I teach as well at the medical school. It's difficult work. My wife, Pam, is a K-5 science teacher, and we want to make sure that all of our children in Virginia have access to a world-class education system. So we appreciate what you do. And one of the things I would also add, Dan, is that part of our budget this year is a pay raise for our teachers of 3%. And as you probably know, our teachers in Virginia on average are making about $9,200 less than the national average. And I find that is unacceptable. So it's something that we're addressing. And again, we want to make sure that we are able to recruit and retain our best teachers around this country. So thank you for what you're doing. Hopefully, we're making progress on addressing your very issue.
Another education-related question from a Facebook user. Colin writes in and asks you about computer science education in grades K through 12. He says, former Governor McAuliffe declared one week to be a VA for CS Lovers Week, Virginia for Computer Science Lovers Week. He wants to know, what actions would you like to take to help continue this agenda? Do you think there's a possibility for the Commonwealth to sponsor some kind of programming competitions for high schoolers?
Absolutely. And I appreciate, Colin, the question. And, you know, one of the points that I make all the time is that we want to make sure that all Virginians have a job that they can support themselves and their families with, no matter who they are, no matter where they are in Virginia. And in order to be qualified for a career, the education is important. And we know that the jobs of the 21st century are really in what you just referred to, in high-tech areas. I like to call it STEAM-H, but science, technology, engineering, the arts, math, and healthcare. And so that type of educational approach is very important. And the earlier that we can expose our children to that type of learning, the better. And one final point I would make, Colin, our daughter is a STEM educated young lady, and we want to see more young girls that are learning coding, that are learning things like cybersecurity, unmanned air systems. We feel that there's a potential in Virginia to do that. So my wife and I, and my administration, my Secretary of Education, are all very much advocates of tech learning and STEM, and we will do all that we can to promote that in Virginia.
Just a reminder to our listeners, NBC4's Julie Carey joining us again with questions for the governor.
Governor, I want to circle back to something. You talked a moment ago about Virginia being welcoming, but we know this situation on the border has really elevated hostilities between some Americans and some Virginians. And White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I don't think felt very welcomed when she was asked to leave a restaurant in Lexington last weekend. I didn't see you say anything about that on your social media feeds. What is your role as governor in trying to ease the tensions? You know, should you take an active role, use the bully pulpit to try to calm the temperature among Virginians who disagree on some of these crucial issues?
It's a great question, Julie. And one of the things that I have tried to do since the day I was inaugurated is really to promote civility in the Commonwealth of Virginia, to make sure that people know that we are welcoming, that we're inclusive. And what we're seeing, I believe, is a reaction to some very policies in Washington that are un-American. They're immoral. And so things like the travel ban, things like pulling away from the Paris Accord, things like the recent separation of children from their families, these things, Julie, are policies that Americans are very, very uncomfortable with. Viscerally, they give us a terrible response. And so people are standing up and saying, you know what, this is not what this country's about. It's not what Virginia's about. And President Trump, please listen to the people of Virginia. Please be inclusive and welcome people rather than continuing to promote this fear-mongering. So I will continue to promote civility. I will continue to look at ways I can work with our current president. But when there are policies like this that are so detrimental, that are so un-American, people are going to stand up and say, enough is enough. And I think that's what you're seeing happen across Virginia and across this country.
But will you use a more active voice to discourage Virginians from doing things like shouting down elected leaders and ridiculing them when they make public appearances and go to restaurants?
Yes, Julie, I'll continue to make my voice known. And again, really remind people across this country, and in our case in Virginia, that we live in a very diverse society, that we need to be tolerant, and that we need to be inclusive. And that's I preach that message every day.
I want to ask you about a Supreme Court ruling. Retailers in Virginia are now praising a recent ruling out of the Supreme Court, which allows them to collect taxes on online sales. And that's estimated that could boost Virginia tax revenues by about $300 million a year. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court decision? How will it affect retailers and consumers? And when does this tax collecting actually begin?
Yes, I appreciate that. Debbie, and to your point, that is a recent ruling. We have been following this very closely, and it will mean about, this is a ballpark estimate, obviously, mm-hmm. but about $300 million a year because of that law change. Now, we're going to need to make some changes in our code in order to address that and comply with it, but it's something that my Secretary of Finance has been following very closely. We'll work with our legislators, and again, that will be very impactful to our budget, $300 million.
Yeah, what happens to that money?
Well, that money will be used in a lot of different ways. As you know, one of the things that I just advocated for in our budget was to put money into our reserve fund so that we can continue our AAA bond rating. Mm-hmm. We still have teachers in Virginia that are underpaid for what they do. We have transportation projects. We have healthcare related projects. So there are a lot of different ways. And my job as governor and working with the legislators will be to invest and spend that money wisely. It's taxpayers' money, and we want to be fiscally responsible.
I have to ask you, Governor, we regularly get questions from Virginia taxpayers wanting to know when the state will fully repeal the personal property tax. If you have approximately $300 million coming in from internet sales taxes, would you support scrapping the remnants of the personal property tax in Virginia?
Great question. And what I do support is that we need comprehensive tax reform. And I have talked about this during the campaign and with my cabinet and agencies. I plan to put together a group of individuals that understand our tax code and really look at what's working and what's not, where we can make changes. And at the end of the day, have a tax system in Virginia that's simpler, that's fair, and that continues to protect our AAA bond rating. So I would say to you and your listeners, stay tuned because there's a lot that's going to happen in the next year regarding tax reform.
Oh, that could be interesting.
Yes.
Relieve a little bit of pain towards the end of the year for many folks. We'll continue with Governor Ralph Northam and your questions. Ask the Governor on WTOP. Governor Ralph Northam in the studio. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. Until 11 o'clock this morning, we'll be taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. I see a few more lines lighting up right now, Governor. 877-336-1035. You can submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or drop a question on Facebook and watch the program on Facebook Live.
Governor, we're going to go to the phones once again. Jonathan calling in from Richmond. Hi, Jonathan. What's your question?
Yes, I wanted to know how the governor felt about the legalization of marijuana in Virginia. We've seen it happen in the surrounding areas of D.C. and Maryland. I wanted to know, was he a supporter of that and what he thought the economic benefits would be if it was legalized in Virginia?
Jonathan, thank you for your call and thanks for listening in Richmond. You know, we've made a tremendous amount of progress with looking at marijuana in Virginia. As you know, as a child neurologist, something that I advocated for several years ago was the use of cannabidiol oil, which is the non-psychoactive portion of marijuana, being used for children with intractable epilepsy. And that was a major hurdle. And we got past that hurdle. And this past year, we actually introduced more legislation to be able to use the same type of treatment for other medical conditions. And so now it is up to a doctor or a provider's discretion to be able to use that. I think the next step, Jonathan, for Virginia is really to look at decriminalizing marijuana, changing the schedule of marijuana so that we can do more research. And also, as we move forward, looking at areas like the District of Columbia, looking at states like Colorado that have legalized it, you know, we need to take this one step at a time. So we're making progress. Personally, Jonathan, as a pediatrician, I don't condone the use of marijuana. I don't think that we need to legalize it, but certainly to look at decriminalizing it in Virginia would be a good next step.
Governor, I want to ask you about an executive order that you signed yesterday giving executive branch employees 2 months of parental leave at full pay for the birth of a new child or the adoption of a baby. Previously, the state provided pregnant women 6 weeks of paid leave following the birth of a child. And of course, workers could also take unpaid leave. Explain the parameters of this executive order and why you made this a priority.
Well, this was something that was very important to me. I don't think there's anything that should be more cherished than bringing in a child, especially a new baby. But also foster children is something that qualifies as well. And so we did sign an executive order yesterday that will allow state employees to take 2 months off with pay. And let me tell you what this is really all about. Number one, it's doing the right thing for families, but it's also for our state agencies to be competitive. And, you know, we are trying to attract talented people that will want to come and work in state government. You know, we want to make sure that they have good salaries and benefits. And so this is just one of those. And so my wife, Pam, and I were very proud to stand there yesterday and sign that executive order. We also had another executive order yesterday that looks at child care and to make sure that our agency workers that have children have a place where their children can go during the day where they'll be safe and where it will be affordable. And that's something that will be expanded throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia. So this was an important day. And again, I think it's a good day for our children and for our families that are young and that have growing families.
Governor, President Trump says his tariffs on imported steel and other goods will put U.S. companies and workers on stronger footing. But there are some who are saying that they could end up backfiring on the people that he is trying to help. The Commerce Department has been deluged with requests from tens of thousands of companies seeking exemptions from those. Talk to us about the impact in Virginia of the increasing tensions over trade and with the tariffs, obviously an agricultural state. What is the impact that is happening in Virginia, and what are your, if you have any concerns about it, what are they?
Well, the impact is significant, Mark, and I think we've already seen some of the consequences of his policies. Harley Davidson, you know, jobs are leaving Harley Davidson. Automobile manufacturers know that it's going to be more expensive to manufacture in this country. They're already being threatened to lose jobs. And then something that's near and dear to my heart, I grew up on a farm in rural Virginia over on the Eastern Shore. We grow soybeans and corn alternating each year. And these tariffs are putting a tremendous impact, negative impact, on farmers throughout Virginia. So the point that I would make, Mark, to your listeners, and I see this over and over again in Washington, policies that are being tweeted out in the morning, that is no way to manage this country. And the right way to do it is to have vision. I think a lot of us have vision, but then to vet our ideas with our policymakers, talk about how we're going to message that, and then move forward. But when you put policies out like our current president is doing that are not vetted, then there are a lot of unintended consequences. And yes, these policies have tremendous impacts on our economy in Virginia that I just mentioned.
President Trump says you can win a trade war. You disagree with him?
I do disagree with him. And again, I think his policies are very detrimental. And you're already seeing that your listeners are already seeing what these policies are doing to businesses throughout Virginia.
All right, Governor, we'll continue. We have more questions coming in the remaining 10 minutes. Back to more questions for the governor after traffic and weather. Final moments of this month's Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam, and your questions at 877-336-1035, 877-336-1035. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment. Governor, quick question here. With the summer vacation season underway, that means many more tourists coming to the Commonwealth. The Virginia's for Lovers slogan, the longest running state tourism slogan in the country, and it is apparently serving the Old Dominion well. Tourists brought in $25 billion in revenue to Virginia last year, a 4% hike from 2016. What do you attribute the growth in tourism to in Virginia, and do you have any specific plans to grow it?
Absolutely. And we live in the best state in this wonderful country of ours, and it is just beautiful, whether you start on the East Coast over on the Eastern Shore or go out into the mountains of the Southwest. And you know, something that has been so successful regarding tourism is our breweries and our wineries and our cideries and distilleries. And now we have the Oyster Trail, and there's just a lot of history in Virginia. So tourism is on fire. And there's nothing better, Mark, than someone that would like to come to Virginia, visit us, spend a little bit of money or a lot, depending on their choice, and then go back to, you know, wherever their home is. So tourism is alive and well. And, you know, one little plug I would make for those that may be interested in watching The Bachelorette. The Bachelorette was taped in Richmond a few weeks ago.
Really?
And will be on the air Monday night, July the 2nd at 8 o'clock.
Are you in it?
Well, we can't talk about any of the details, but I would just say for people to tune in on Monday night.
Well, one of the big tourist attractions in Virginia, of course, is Mount Vernon. Julie, you have a question regarding Mount Vernon.
Yeah, I had kind of a plum assignment yesterday on a beautiful day to be at George Washington's estate, but the folks there are very worried that historic view that so a million tourists enjoy each year is going to be compromised because Dominion Energy is planning to build a gas compressor plant right across the river in Accokeek, Maryland. Now, Dominion says their stacks will not rise high enough to be seen over the trees. The folks at Mount Vernon say no matter what happens over there, eventually it's going to breed more industrial development. They're launching a campaign called Save George Washington's View, going nationwide with it to try to convince Dominion to find another site. I'd like to get your view about whether or not that development plan threatens such an important historical site. And will you weigh in? I think you have the ear of Dominion CEO.
You know, I am not aware of that particular issue, Julie, but it's something that would concern me, and I will be glad to look into it. I will tell you just as a general rule, and I have had discussions with a lot of our environmental groups and Dominion as well. I really want to move more toward renewable energy and wean ourselves away from fossil fuels. And I have told people, I've told Dominion that by 2030, I would like at least 30% or more of the energy that's generated in Virginia to come from renewable energy. And we are making progress with both solar and wind. And so I will look into this particular situation at Mount Vernon and talk to all the folks that are involved. But if it's going to impact their view, if it's going to contribute to environmental detriment, then it's certainly something that I'm concerned about. And I will do everything that I can to look into it.
All right, we're going to go back to the phones real quickly and talk to Linda, who's calling in from Sterling, Virginia. Linda, go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Hi, Governor. Thank you so much for some of the executive orders and House bills that you signed recently, Order 12 for parental leave for state employees and House Bill 1087. I was curious if there had been a resolution as far as state employees getting either a one-time bonus in 2018 or a pay increase in 2018, or are we going to have to still wait for 2019?
Well, thank you for your call, and thank you for doing all the great work in Virginia. And as part of our budget, which will come into play on July 1, there is a 2% pay raise for our state employees, so I think that you'll be able to look forward to that.
Governor, there is even more construction coming, and we understand, to Interstate 66. Later this week, VDOT begins a two-year project, adding a third lane eastbound along 4 miles of the highway between the Dulles Connector Road and Fairfax Drive, and there will be direct access from eastbound 66 to the West Falls Church Metro Station. Those changes should address a chronic choke point where the number of lanes drops from 4 to 3 and then again from 3 to 2. Many people had thought that major construction inside the Beltway on 66 perhaps was done when the tolls became operational. How disruptive does the state think this new project will be? We also have construction on 66 outside of the Beltway to build out the tolls there.
Well, we certainly want to make progress, and transportation is a tremendous issue. But as we move forward and do these projects, Mark, we want to make it as less intrusive as we can. So a lot of the work that will be done will be after hours, after rush hour, mm-hmm. In the evening. And so we're working with VDOT. We're working with our contractors to make sure these are as less of a nuisance as possible. But at the same time, as you know, and as your listeners know, 66 is heavily, heavily traveled, and we need to continue to look at ways of making it more efficient. Obviously, we're following the tolling very closely. We talk about that each time I come into the nerve center. But we want to make sure at the end of the day that we're able to move people from point A to point B, and that's really what I'm focused on and what our Secretary of Transportation, Shannon Valentine, is working very hard on.
Any indication on if there will be, I guess I should ask, where are we on implementing the transit and other commuting options along the 66 corridor that we've heard so much about that were part of the tolling package, with now 30 miles of the highway as a construction zone? Anything to ramp that up?
Well, I think maybe to your question, we want to be able to move people from point A to point B. There are also people that like to what we call slug here in Northern Virginia, and there need to be parking lots where people can do that. So this is something that I'm working with our Secretary of Transportation, working with VDOT to, again, at the end of the day, really make 66 and all the other projects that we have going on up here in Northern Virginia. Billions of dollars are being spent on transportation, and so we want to make it as efficient as we can.
Real quickly, 15 seconds, Medicaid expansion to cover an additional 400,000 low-income residents. How is that being implemented? I know it takes effect January 1st. What do folks in the state need to know real quickly?
Well, our Secretary of Health is working very hard, our DMAS program, and we're so excited, Debbie, that 400,000 working Virginians will now have access to affordable and quality health care, and that will be implemented, we hope, if everything goes as planned, by January 1. But people are working very, very hard on the implementation, and it's something that all Virginians should be proud of.
Got to be a big relief to have that budget and Medicaid reform
behind you.
Well, we have a great budget. It works for all Virginians. It's structurally sound. And as you just said, it expands health care for 400,000 Virginians. It's, again, something we're very proud of.
Governor, thank you again for coming in this month.
Thanks, Governor. Good to be here in the Nerve Center.
We'll see you next time.
Don't forget to look at TV on Monday night.
Governor Ralph Northam on WTOP.